Welcome back to the Mediocre Movie Club podcast. I'm John Kissel. It's just me tonight. This podcast is typically, you know, a group of friends. We've been together for like 10 years now who enjoy discussing movies, who want to talk about movies in any way possible. This is usually the case. Tonight, sadly, it is not. Other members had prior engagements, so this podcast episode is just going to be about me. Our format is for for new listeners who are picking the exact right time to start listening to the Mediocre Movie Club podcast. We pick three movies, typically on a theme, and we write about those movies at our website, mediocremovie.club. And then after the reviews have been written, we get together as a group. Again, you know, not tonight. I'm in my routine. I'm in my intro mode, which is going just fantastically, as you can tell. After we've written those reviews, we get together and discuss said three movies. This last month, we discussed Ben Affleck-directed movies because of his latest release, Air, being released on Prime. And we paired Air with other Affleck-directed movies, like his debut, Gone Baby Gone, and his follow-up, and the extremely successful, The Town. We didn't talk about Argo, which is a movie he won the Oscar for, although he was not nominated for Best Director. Argo is fine. It's a perfectly fine movie that has, you know, largely been forgotten as a Best Picture winner. And also Live by Night, his most, well, I haven't seen it, so I can't speak to its quality, but certainly his most forgotten of the five movies that he's directed. Live by Night seems like a movie that doesn't exist in the parlance of Blank Check, our competitor podcast, of course. And haven't seen Live by Night, can't speak to it. Interested in it, like a Prohibition era, like period epic. I don't know, maybe. Seems like it has a good cast. Elle Fanning's in there, always great. But here nor there, we're talking about Gone Baby Gone and The Town and Air. We'll go in reverse chronological order and start with Air. This is Affleck's 2023 release. It came out only a few months ago. He wrote this with his longtime friend and occasional creative partner, Matt Damon. First movie they've written together since The Last Duel in 2021. But like, obviously their big breakthrough was Good Will Hunting, which they wrote together and won the Oscar for. Air is also the first movie out of their joint production company, Artist Equity, which in the tradition of like something like Charlie Chaplin's United Artists Studio, is going to try to be more equitable with profits of the movies that this studio makes, provided they can make the profits. Air had a large budget, approaching $100 million, and it was successful for the movie that it is, but a movie with that big a budget, that's pretty difficult to be successful. You need to make almost $200 million for that movie to be successful, and it did not make that. It didn't even clear its production budget, but here nor there, that's not really what we do here at the Mediocre Movie Club, is talk about numbers and box office. But Air is about Nike, the company Nike, in its early phases, when it was predominantly a company for runners, a company that made runners apparel and was trying to break into other sports, basketball division languishing and on the verge of being cut, when suddenly a visionary character played by Matt Damon, who works for Nike, under Phil Knight, played by Affleck in a curly wig, or maybe he styled his hair to be curly, I don't know. Didn't dig into the production background of this movie, lands upon the idea that they should throw their entire budget into just landing a single client, and that client just happens to be Michael Jordan on the verge of his entry into the NBA. It is successful, and Nike becomes a global leader. And probably what drew Affleck and Damon to this specific story out of all the stories two very powerful Hollywood types can tell is that this deal is significant for the movie, not because an upstart like, I don't know, $100 million. I don't know what the market cap of Nike was in the early 80s, but it surely wasn't what it is now. When it's Nike's probably in the 12 figure range right now, in the $100 billion range. But then, I don't know, 100 million range, 500 million, micro cap, like 2 to 10, or a small cap, 2 to $10 billion company. How that, you know, struggling upstart, no one ever gave them any chance, company, like, grew into a world beater. But about how Michael Jordan, and specifically his family, because Jordan is not a speaking character in this movie, you only see him really from behind, in a successful choice, mostly successful, I think, how he was able to become the first athlete, at least in basketball, I'm not sure about other sports, or just like in general sports marketing, if he was the first one to do this or not, but as opposed to just receiving a one-time chunk of money for endorsing this company and wearing their products exclusively, he was able to get shares of the sale, of each sale of the shoe. So money in perpetuity, you become a stakeholder, less money for the company, more money for the athlete, although that kind of investment by the athlete enriches the company as well, everybody wins, etc., etc., which is kind of exactly the kind of thing that Actors Equity, the production company, is trying to engender in the movie business. I mean, United Artists is not a company that is around anymore. I'm sure someone's written a book about what happened to that company, to that production company. I'm sure it's interesting. I don't know very much about that. I just know that it failed spectacularly after. I mean, you know, to their credit, after many decades of operation. So if Actors Equity can get 40 years worth of production before folding or being sold to one of the major studios, so much the better. Although the way things are going, maybe Actors Equity buys one of the major studios instead. The movie industry is in a fucked up place. So Air, I don't want to just recapitulate my review where I included this, but in 2023 at this moment right now, like, 3 is a trend of movies that are extolling these like corporate success stories, between Flaming Hot, which was just recently released on Hulu, direct to streaming, about the creation of the Flaming Hot Cheeto and the expansion of fried cheesy snack food into the Latino market. Huzzah? Question mark. And Blackberry, which is one of the best movies of the year, but it is also about the rise and fall of the Blackberry company, of Research in Motion, the company that made Blackberries more specifically. So these kind of stories of corporate success and corporate triumphs are like in direct opposition to like a lot of television, TV stories from last year about corporate scammers, corporate sharks, ruthless corporate types, not just in like the ongoing saga of Succession, but in the miniseries realm, specifically with like Elizabeth Holmes miniseries on Hulu, The Dropout, and the Showtime miniseries about Uber, and We Crashed on Apple Plus about Adam Newman and We Crashed, that's not the name of his company, We Work, there it is. It's another example of this, of this trend that Hollywood often gets into, where they'll release Dante's Peak and Volcano within like 2 months of each other, where it's everybody has the same idea and they're bidding for the same things, and then one company gets them and is like, well, we lost out on that, we need to get something similar. And I don't know if that necessarily is the case here with Air and Flamin' Hot and Blackberry, and there might be some others that I'm forgetting. But this trend of like corporate triumphs, and it's pretty easy to take a jaundiced eye towards just that idea on its surface. Like, to quote Don Draper, you know, that's what the money is for. Like, these successful corporations, whoever is the parent company of Cheetos, Nike, like, they don't need a pat on the back. They're already tremendously profitable. Not so much Blackberry, but Blackberry, again, is a very different movie. And because that's about a failure, I mean, maybe that's why that movie is so much better. But Air is not about a failure. It is about a wild success. And as far as what kind of movie it is, like, it's very much a return to just like a boardroom drama of the type that it gets made less and less. Like, this is exactly the type of movie that people talk about when they say, like, we're at where did the mid-budget adult market movie go? Like, this is an example of it, and it's been well received, and this was mostly well reviewed, and there clearly is still a desire for these kind of movies, and this is a prime example of one that also fits pretty well within, like, if you were comparing this to like a mass market genre, like superhero movies or whatever, like, this is a totally middling entry that is quite entertaining, that has a very competent cast, that has its high moments, but in general is nothing more than that experience. Like, this, I gave this a B- in my review at MutantMovie.club. It means it's doing something well enough to get it past that C+, which is just like the total average. Like, a C+, perfectly fine grade. That's a perfectly fine movie. Didn't offend me on any level, really, and had stuff going in its direction. And I think what gives Air that bump is the quality of the cast. I think Viola Davis is predictably quite good as Michael Jordan's mother, who does most of the bargaining with Matt Damon's character and Nike itself. I think this movie takes on a bit of like a heist flavor, which, per the town, which we'll talk about a little later, is something that Affleck is quite reverent of. He's a big fan of that genre. And there is a lot of getting the team together. There's like the glorious introduction of the shoe designer, the technical director, whoever is like working in the basement of Nike in the shoe lab, putting canvas together and rubber and whatever basketball shoes are made of. Like bringing him into the team, and Jason Bateman's like sales vice president, Chris Tucker, kind of sticking out like a sore thumb in this movie. He's on the team, and then executing their heist / sale against larger companies like Adidas and Converse. The movie makes a good point as far into how like Nike is just better suited to devote its attention to Jordan. It works in that Mad Men kind of way, where you're seeing like corporate types have big, important conversations while also seeming enough like recognizable people to where you're kind of in on the conversation, as opposed to they're, you know, like above you in like at higher levels of society. It gives you the feeling of sitting in on an important conversation and not making you feel like you're spying. You're like, you don't belong there. A lot of that is in Matt Damon's like everyman performance. And a lot of it, too, is in Affleck's performance and the way that he makes Phil Knight into, like, a risible weirdo. It's about as sideways a view as the movie could possibly take on a guy who is still very much involved in the company, whose approval this movie must have if they're going to make this movie. So, it has the feel of a movie that it knows where the line is tiptoeing as close to it as they possibly can, but it still ends up being far, far, far away from the line. And some of that just might be my perspective in what I want from a movie like this. Like, again, part of the reason I love Blackberry so much is because it's able to look at the company in a way that is not admiring. It finds things to admire within Research in Motion, but it's far more heavily tilted towards this is absurd. There's a lot of problems here that any outside observer would be able to pick up on, and that's just not the arc that wouldn't fit in Air if this movie is the movie that has to exist. Like, it just wouldn't fit there because the story is ultimately successful. The movie would, I think, ascend to a higher level if it was able to match a scene early in the movie with a scene late in the movie. At a certain point, Damon is telling, I think, Jason Bateman's character, I'm not exactly sure, who or why he's so keyed in on Jordan at a time when he was a highly placed draft, like a NBA lottery pick, but No one had any sense of the kind of career he was going to have. And the way that he's able to key in on it, he explains quite vividly and quite evocatively, based on a single play, Jordan's game-winning shot for North Carolina in the NCAA tournament. He's able to break that down in a way that speaks to, and a lot of this is like 2020 hindsight, sure, but he's able to speak to it in a way that makes it totally clear to the viewer that Damon is correct and that Jordan is a special player and that Damon is intelligent enough to recognize all this stuff. And what he's saying is also unique enough to where it's possible that other people have not keyed into it. So it's accomplishing a lot of things at the same time. It's a great scene. But then at the very end of the movie, when Air makes the strange choice to undercut a lot of its characters, like it turns in the final presentation, when Nike is presenting to Jordan and trying to convince a person who has not wanted anything to do with them really throughout the rest of the movie that he should in fact sign with them, Bateman kind of steps on his own dick, and Knight is high-handed, and he enacts this little drama where he comes in late that does not work. And this is all set up for Damon's like big speech, which is corny enough and non-specific enough to where like Donald Trump's re-election campaign grabbed it and put it behind a campaign ad. It's like 3 minutes long, and it's just about generalized greatness. And it's a bad speech. It's again, it's corny and it's hacky, and it should be the thing to convince Jordan that these people they're passionate about me, sure. But if this is how they run their company, like, I need to get the fuck out of here. So the movie recovers thanks to Viola Davis in a final couple scenes. But you can definitely see where it would have been improved. I think too, the movie would have improved by focusing more on the sneaker itself, perhaps. I don't know. Like, I did they just innovate the personality behind the shoe in Jordan, or is the shoe itself any good compared to like, does it justify like the Reagan era people in the inner city are shooting themselves or shooting each other over Jordans? Is it just the personality? Is the shoe engineer in the basement actually doing something special? There's just so much cultural cachet around like Jordan sneakers that I don't know. It might just all be Jordan. That's totally possible, and there might have been nothing for the movie to add. But like the very, very brief period of my life when I was anything approaching like a sneakerhead would have been when I was like 12 and 13, and my classmates like passed around East Bay magazines like they were pornos. Like, oh, look at the new Air Bacon. And the difference between Nike's like single air pocket in the bottom of its basketball shoes versus Reebok's like honeycomb bullshit. Who knows if any of that stuff was useful or whatever, but to a 12-year-old, it looked cool. Was there anything like these air pockets or the pumps or whatever in the Jordan sneaker itself? Any like shoe technology? I don't know. You don't have any sense of that from Air. It's almost purely like a boardroom slash corporate heist kind of thing, and that's acceptable. It's perfectly fine. I do wish Air had been a little better than it is. Perfectly fine. A solid movie that I'd recommend to anybody. Fairly interesting even for the layman who's not interested in sports. So that's it on Air, and then moving backwards through Affleck's filmography back to The Town. This is a 2010 movie, huge, huge critical and commercial hit for him. Made like six or seven times its budget. Got Jeremy Renner nominated for an Oscar, and there might have been some technical nominations in there as well. Renner didn't win, but to be nominated, that's a true honor, right? This is much like Gone Baby Gone, his debut, which we'll talk about next. This is set in a very specific neighborhood of Boston, where, per the opening, Chiron is The highest concentration of bank robbers are born in this area. There are X number of bank robberies in Boston, and they all come, whatever the specific verbiage is. That's all bullshit you read about afterwards. But point being that Affleck's character and Renner's character, they're in a gang together, a bank robbing gang, come from a long line of bank robbers in this little Boston neighborhood. This movie, much like Air, is a perfectly acceptable heist movie. Perfectly acceptable member of its specific genre. I think with The Town, this is the one we're going to have the least to say about because there is functionally nothing new here. Even in the sense of this being set in a very specific neighborhood, compared to Gone Baby Gone, this doesn't have like a quarter of like the environmental verisimilitude that's in Gone Baby Gone, or at least the perception of it. I don't know. Maybe people from Boston think Gone Baby Gone makes them look like idiots and brutes. That might not, they might just appreciate, you know, having so many locals cast in that movie, as is the case here. But it's subservient to the characters played by people like John Hamm and Affleck and Renner and Rebecca Hall, none of whom are like covered in grime and ugly history the way that Affleck's brother or Amy Ryan or Ed Harris or half a dozen other characters in Gone Baby Gone are. Even some of the unique things in The Town, you know, theoretically, like the way that they dress themselves, the way that they hide their identities during these bank robberies. I don't know, like Point Break, they were dressing up in presidential masks. And there's been lots of the hockey mask from Heat. There's been lots of bank robbers hiding their identities. It's not so inventive that they dress up as nuns in like old people masks to rob a bank here. A little disconcerting, sure. But that's kind of the whole point, isn't it? There's a romance subplot here between Hall and Affleck's character. Affleck gets into a problem here where he is directing this movie that he adapted from another crime novel in the same way that he did Gone Baby Gone. We'll talk about that. He's the creative force behind this project, and he's also putting his face forward as the guy, as the protagonist. And his relationship with Rebecca Hall starts out as a surveillance mission to make sure this person who they kidnap when they don't really have to. It's all Renner's character, his impulsiveness, and his like inherent violence. They kidnap her, and she can potentially identify them after they release her. So Affleck is doing surveillance, and his version of surveillance is being a boyfriend to her and eventually like sleeping with her and becoming fairly serious in the short timeline of this movie. And there's never any sense that this is anything other than what she thinks it is, which is him falling for her. It is that to Affleck's character. And perhaps if he had a little more distance from this character, he might have seen the better movie that could have existed if there was more ambivalence about what this relationship is. If he started to fall for Hall's character in spite of himself, in spite of his better, or his, not better, but his more professional instincts, because, I mean, obviously there's no way this can work. That's just a more interesting movie, and the way Affleck plays it is very straightforward. His Renner's character, who has known Affleck since they were children, Affleck's character since they were children, and they've been friends forever. Is there anything more appealing to this character than loyalty? And the answer to that question is not really. He's loyal in the way that like a junkyard dog would be loyal to its junkyard owner. He'll attack whoever the owner wants him to, and then one day maybe he'll bite the hand of his owner when things get a little too surprising or heated. are tense. And that's kind of all, it's very well portrayed, and I don't disagree with that Oscar nomination necessarily. Like, this was a period when Renner was more focused on acting than, like, flipping houses. And he's quite good in this era in many different things. But it's as one note as more or less the rest of the movie. Like, this movie is not really about anything other than will Affleck be able to leave Boston and find peace in Florida, which he kind of does in a very corny ending. And at least this, like, stolen money is able to be turned into an ice rink for Massachusetts kids desperate to play hockey at the Boys and Girls Club. Huzzah. Nonetheless, what environmental ticks there are still pretty effective. The movie does have a strong sense of place in its casting that's further down. Like, the two goons who are also in Affleck and Renner's gang, quite well cast. One goon shows up in Gone Baby Gone. The other might just as well, too. He's got that kind of face that is specific, but could also very easily melt into the background. The IT tech goon. And like Pete Postlethwaite, this is one of his last roles. Highly memorable. The most memorable thing in the movie as the Irish immigrant who never lost his accent, who has set up shop selling flowers and organizing drug rings and bank robberies, and highly credible as the grizzled crime lord that the FBI seems to know about but has no interest in taking down. Like, they're not going after him, referred to as the florist. I think people who know him call him Fergie, but the florist is just better. Yeah, John Hamm's FBI agent is interested in taking down Affleck's bank robbery gang instead of the people that's organizing the gang, i.e. the florist. Here nor there. That's what the movie must be. This movie can't really be about John Hamm, like, in the middle of making Mad Men. I've brought that show up 3 times in this podcast. Strange. But in the middle of making Mad Men, it's not going to be about him versus a visibly ill Pete Postlethwaite as opposed to movie star Affleck. Kind of just the way it is. The action scenes are pretty good. Affleck, again, like, they're perfectly fine. They're not the best you're ever going to see in a movie. But the ultimate question is, like, why watch this when Heat is on the shelf? As it must be in all movie lovers' homes. There's just... It's just inferior in every way to a dozen better heist movies, many of which have been directed by Michael Mann. The town is just thin. I'm glad it made a lot of money for Affleck and it got him to the next thing, although the next thing is Argo, which, you know, Argo is fine. Maybe we'll one day do forgettable Best Picture winners, because there's really no other way to talk about Argo than its legacy. Which is, you know, frankly non-existent. The occasional hack, like faux hack, or the person who is funny trying to be a hack will say, like, Argo, fuck yourself, and, like, that's his legacy. So, yeah, the town is fine. Still the best thing I think Affleck's done as a director is his debut in Gone Baby Gone. This is adapted from a Dennis Lehane novel as opposed to the guy who wrote the book that the town is based on. Lehane is... his resume is better, by far. Whatever you feel about Mystic River, like, Lehane has worked on The Wire. He's just worked on more interesting stuff. And Gone Baby Gone is so clearly a crime novel from a fairly thoughtful person, in the sense of how it functions as a morality play, which I think it very much is, and which is why it's better than the very recognizable, like, stock heist film that the town is. In Gone Baby Gone, a little girl has vanished from her neighborhood. Her ne'er-do-well mother has the sense to organize the media and get the cameras on the front yard and get the word out there that there's a reward for her to find her daughter and her daughter's missing, etc., etc. The local cops are augmented by a private detective team slash romantic team played by Casey Affleck and Michelle Monaghan. And they team up with the police. The detectives are Ed Harris and what must be like a Boston descendant. Like, this guy is a type. He is like a working character actor. I don't know, have his name in front of me, but quite credible in the role. He was like a red-nosed police detective who's, you know, drank too much whiskey and is like a few years away from retirement. and yeah, they have to scour through a rough part of Boston and try and figure out what has happened to this kid. Turns out, over the course of the movie, that the kid has been kidnapped by her uncle in conjunction with Ed Harris and his partner, in coordination with the lieutenant played by Morgan Freeman, for no other reason than Amy Ryan correctly is judged by her brother, played by Titus Welliver, the kid's uncle, to be a negligent parent who is putting her daughter at serious risk. And they enact a foster care scheme to get her out of the house, and things, as they inevitably do, in I don't know, I hesitate to call the kidnapping of a child a small town crime or a small time crime, but that's kind of exactly what it is. Like shades of Coen Brothers movies where people who are not criminals try to be criminals and fail miserably. And that in a lot of ways, that's what Gone Baby Gone is, except much, much, much darker, questionably dark in some cases. In the same way that something like The Town and The Fighter, I think to better effect, really dig deep to find Boston natives, Gone Baby Gone is maybe the best representative of Boston movies as far as casting. Like, certainly not The Departed, that put, you know, with Scorsese, people want to work with Scorsese, so he was able to get whoever he wanted to. Affleck in Gone Baby Gone, who is not from one of these kind of neighborhoods. I want to say he's from Cambridge, which is where Harvard is, of course. He's not from these kind of neighborhoods, but clearly people in the neighborhood, if he asked them, were willing to appear on camera. There are just regular-ass people in this movie, and it's obvious, and it does so much to build the world out. There's an early scene where Casey Affleck, whose character's name is Patrick in the movie, so I'll refer to him as Patrick to avoid confusion, where Patrick and Michelle Monaghan's character, whose name I don't know, or don't remember, go into like a daytime bar to try and find some answers. And the people in this bar are perfect. Like a recent episode of the podcast, I talked about how like Romanian movies, directors that work in the Romanian new wave of the last like 15, 20 years are not making tourist attractions for Romania. Like, no one's going to watch 4 days, or no, 4 months, 3 weeks, and 2 days and be like, I would sure like to see some of that architecture. They would watch that movie and be like, if I ever find myself in Romania, I need to have a return ticket immediately. Pass. Hard pass on spending any time there. Affleck, for all of his like public love for Boston and his patronage of their sports teams, is not making an advertisement for Boston in this movie. This is a rough place to be. And it sells the pseudo-conservative message of this movie, which is like, if you were a cop, if you were a private detective who worked with these kind of cases, which, like, early in the movie, Patrick and Monaghan have a conversation where they're like, we don't do this kind of stuff. If we start doing it, I think the exact wording is something about looking. It's poetic. It's like rustic, or it's simple and but poetic, however they phrase it. But it's about looking. And the idea here is that, like, if you look enough, Are you destroying yourself? Are you ruining yourself? Are you making it impossible to be around other people? Are you destroying your relationships? Are you making yourself a worse person by looking? And, like, that's an interesting question for someone who would work in law enforcement and for the viewer themselves. Like, the aforementioned, like, questionably dark part of this movie is, like, a case within a case about a little boy who goes missing at a later part of the movie, and they track him down to a child molester's hovel where... where Affleck finds bloody underwear in the sink and the boy dead in the tub, and it's ruthless. It's like a disgusting, brutal scene. And maybe that has to be in there if the movie is about what looking does to the looker. But goddamn, it's almost gratuitous in how brutal that scene is. It's not something you like. That's a tiny slice of movies that have that kind of, like, violence against, or you don't see the murder slash rape, but even that level of implied violence is not something that's in most movies, many movies, if not all movies. That's a tiny number that goes as dark as Gone Baby Gone does. And, like, the conservative message of it is, at what point do I get to say fuck these people? At what point do I get to take everything from them? Because they forfeited their rights as a parent, as a citizen, whatever. And not necessarily that they're doing anything wrong, not necessarily that I've caught them in the act of a crime, but if I know things are bad there, what am I allowed to do? And, like, the answer is nothing. Like, if you're going to have rights, you got rights. But there is that idea in this movie of, like, the put-upon civil servant who only on a good day operates with people on their worst days. That's just kind of like that's what police officers say, at least, is, you know, I have a hard time dealing with people because I see them at terrible moments. And if you saw those terrible moments over and over and over again, like, at what point do you just start to hate everybody? And especially in the context of what they'll do to children. Not just active abuse, but the neglect. Like, Ed Harris has a very long speech about a case where he framed a guy who was neglecting his child, beating his child. And the way that he tells this story and the way that he rejects any pushback from Patrick is really great work from him. It's passionate, it's reflexive, and it's, like, from a place that is deep, deep, deep inside of him. Gone Baby Gone just, like, asks that of the viewer, and it sets up this morality play where, like, Patrick is given the choice of leave the kid in this poorly thought out but momentarily happy circumstance with Morgan Freeman and his wife in the woods, in a cabin. Everything's fine. The girl seems happy. They seem to love her. The hug is very long when he decides, you know, to turn them in and get the girl sent back to her mother, Amy Ryan. But the movie then leaves the viewer in, I think, like, 2000. This came out in 2007. Great year for movies. This is... you know, nowhere near the heights of 2007, but only because 2007 had so much quality. But even within that context, like, one of the great endings from that year, where the girl is returned to Amy Ryan, and it's revealed that she didn't know the name of her daughter's, like, favorite doll the whole time. And this is revealed to Patrick, it's revealed to the viewer at the same time, and you just have to sit with it. Like, what's going to happen to this girl? What's going to happen to the momentary fame that the mother is capitalizing on, that is surely going to magnify her negative traits, of which there are many? It's not an A plus cinema score movie. It doesn't leave the viewer skipping out of the theater, Proud of the Species. It does the opposite of that. Like, it is a dark, dark movie. And becomes so much better in contrast to the compromise, like the artistic compromises that Affleck will have to make. Well, makes in The Town by casting himself as the protagonist, and then makes in Air by contracting with Nike to make this movie. It just doesn't feel like there's any holding, there's no holding anything back in Gone Baby Gone. And like the riskiness of its premise and its execution makes it the best, makes it still. Not the best thing Affleck's ever done, but as far as directing, I think by a strong margin, the best thing he's ever directed. Casey Affleck, his brother, is like clearly the more talented of the two. Like even the best thing that Affleck's done, which I don't know, might be Dazed and Confused, might be The Way Back, is quite good. I'd have to see. I'd have to have his filmography in front of me. It's not Good Will Hunting. I don't know. If I had Brian Hartman on the podcast with me, he would disagree. But that movie is fine. I don't get the intense praise for it. But as far as Casey Affleck, the best thing the Affleck family has done by far is The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford, followed by Casey's role in Manchester by the Sea, and then maybe Ben can get on the action. Casey Affleck, of course, has been like out of the spotlight for several years, like really since he won the Oscar. But while he was winning the Oscar, it came out about his like sex pestery around directing I'm Not There. I don't know. Like, he settled those cases. He's publicly apologized. Let the man get back to work, I guess I would say. Like, if you're contrite and if you make amends, you can work again, right? I don't know. He's been in, like, he was in a movie with, who was it, Jason Segel, I think, and and Dakota Johnson in 2021 called Our Friend, but that was still, like, deep pandemic time. That was a movie that came and went. He did direct something himself that I haven't seen, and he was in another movie around the time of Our Friend. The Salt of the Earth, maybe? Was that what that was called? The World to Come? I don't know. I don't remember exactly. It was featured prominently in one of David Ehrlich's top 25 videos. It was right in the middle, like 12 or 13. But these are small projects when, like, maybe that's working for Casey Affleck. I love him as an actor. And would love to see him in another vehicle like Jesse James, like Manchester by the Sea. Something that really puts him forward, as opposed to like Covers in a Sheet and A Ghost Story, a movie that I did not like, that we hopefully will not talk about because I don't want to watch it again. Boring as shit, A Ghost Story. Rooney Mara eats a pie. Congratulations, Rooney Mara. You should eat more pies, clearly, like way more than 100 pounds. Gone Baby Gone, high quality, high quality. Would recommend all of these movies. Like, Affleck is an old enough hand within the industry to like. It's probably difficult for him, if not impossible, to make a bad movie just because he's inundated with movies and he knows how to operate on a set. And he very much seems like he can get whoever he wants to work with him. So there's only so bad a movie like that from a person like that is going to be. Again, haven't seen Live by Night. Might disprove this whole theory. But as far as these three movies, and I'd throw Argo in there as well, all good. All strong movies. Gone Baby Gone, head and shoulders above everything else. I think that'll wrap us up for this Ben Affleck as director episode. Stay tuned to this feed and our website, nukemovie.club, for our next trio. We're going to enter into first half of 2023 mode in the next month. We'll do a podcast about the best of 2023 so far, not just movies, but like TV and maybe even video games. If any of our members have played anything new, but probably mostly movies and mostly TV. We'll have one of those. We'll do one of those in the next month. And our next three movies, we're going to talk about 2023 releases, Creed 3 and Magic Mike's Last Dance and Reality. You know, those first two are self-explanatory, and then Reality is a movie that I'm anxious to see. I haven't seen Magic Mike's Last Dance either. I'm anxious to see that. Soderbergh. And, you know, those are good movies, Magic Mike's. But Reality is about is an adaptation of the transcript from the moment that Reality Winner, an NSA whistleblower, and the FBI squared off in her home. And I'm fairly sure that's what the movie is. Just that scene of her initial interrogation. Should be quite interesting. Sydney Sweeney plays Reality Winner, an up-and-coming talent, in something very different from the roles that she's previously been seen in, like the crap she has to put up with in Euphoria. Oh God. It is, I will say, delightful to see the idol crashing and burning on HBO, and perhaps Sam Levinson will be exposed as the control freak hack that he clearly is. No more of that guy, please. Check us out on the internet at MunichMovie.club. I've recently posted reviews of Avatar The Way of Water. I wrote a lot about that movie. I mentioned my Letterboxd group account at John_Kissel. I put everything on there, whereas I just put the things that I write long about on MunichMovie.club. So if you want my little capsule reviews, that's where I put them, on Letterboxd. Facebook, Munich Movie Club. Twitter, Munich Movie Club. Instagram, Mediocre Movie Club. Hope that the listener enjoyed me just talking to myself in an empty room with the fan going and cars going by in the background. I hope the microphone didn't pick those up. Hope everybody enjoyed listening to that person that I'm describing now. Just go on and on for what the timer now says is 52 and a half minutes. I'm sure I'll cut that down. Thank you for joining me tonight, listeners.